I'm Sylvia Maria Gross. This is Casey Kearns, and we're back in the studio now with two guests who will help us examine the implementation of Kansas's new privatized Medicaid program, the first in the nation of its kind. Medicaid is a state program providing health insurance for the poor and disabled. That's almost 400,000 people in Kansas who currently receive those services. The new CanCare program is supposed to save the state $1 billion over the next 5 years and provide better care. Dr. Susan Mosier is the director of Medicaid services at the Kansas Department for Health and Environment and overseeing CanCare now. Dr. Mosier, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks for having us.
And Scott Brunner is senior analyst at the Kansas Health Institute and former Medicaid director. Welcome to Casey Kearns.
Thank you.
Dr. Mosier, can you explain in a nutshell, why has Kansas made this shift from Medicaid to CanCare?
What we had previously is we had, for two-thirds of our population, were in managed care with two managed care companies. And we have moved to increased choice for those individuals, as well as we've had behavioral health services and long-term services and supports, as well as waiver services moved into the managed care so that we can actually coordinate care across the different areas of health care for an individual. So an individual has behavioral health needs, physical health needs, waiver services needs, and there can actually be care coordination across the whole health spectrum for that patient.
So two-thirds of people who are in Medicaid in previous years were already in managed care programs?
That is correct.
And how do people know which program they will get on when they go on Medicaid or when they've been transferred over?
They have a choice of where they go. When we moved from the previous program to CanCare, we utilized an algorithm to match people with what seemed to make the most sense for them, which would be if they're in a nursing facility, that would be, you know, their primary caregiver, or if there was their PCP, their primary care physician. If they had family member needs that a particular MCO provider was with just one or two of the MCOs instead of all three. But then they had a choice period of a minimum of 90 days to switch, to look at all the programs and to look at what was best for them as an individual or they as a family, and they had that opportunity to change. And we are now entering the open enrollment period so that they can change again for next year.
So they were assigned an MCO or managed care organization, but then they had the opportunity to change.
That is correct.
And those three groups that are managing Medicaid now in Kansas are Amerigroup Kansas Inc., Sunflower State Health Plan, and United Healthcare Community Plan of Kansas. I want to bring Scott Brunner of the Kansas Health Institute into the conversation. How has your organization sort of been following this shift?
Our role is largely in helping explain the choice that Kansas Medicaid made moving to managed care to legislators and stakeholders in communities around Kansas, just to translate what Medicaid was like before and what it will be like as the transition to CanCare happens. We've also been trying to monitor enrollment, total enrollment in the Medicaid program over time, just to verify that there haven't been reductions or losses of people in the Medicaid program, which as the transition occurs. And I guess the last area we've been watching or monitoring is total spending. Since the transition to see if that is changing in the way that the state would expect.
Now, from your perspective, you ran Medicaid previously, and how big of a shift really is this? Dr. Mosier just said two-thirds of people were already in managed care programs through Medicaid.
Well, it's a very significant shift, and as you've said earlier, that Kansas is the only state at the time, and it's one of the only states that's looking at moving the entire Medicaid population into risk-based managed care for all the services that they receive. And that's a very innovative approach and different in terms of how states choose to run their Medicaid programs. I'd say that Dr. Mosier was absolutely right that most of the people in Medicaid before CanCare were in managed care, but most of the dollars that were spent were through the fee-for-service system of where you obtain a service from a provider, and the state would pay that claim. So the dollar change of management of the financial side of the program is a very significant shift with CanCare.
And Dr. Mosher, just logistically, did this involve letting go a lot of the staff at the Department of Health and Environment, all the people that previously ran the Medicaid programs?
No, actually, we have changes in some of the work that people do from direct fee-for-service into managed care oversight, but basically they're not a reduction in the individuals.
So how is it saving the state money?
That's a very good question. And one of the things that we looked at is we wanted to take a long-term perspective on how to reduce or bend that cost curve down over time. So Medicaid costs have been rising in the state at about a 7.4% rate, and that's pretty consistent nationally. In fact, other states, some are up to 10%. And so when we're looking at that, we want to provide good quality care and maintain or improve the quality of care while bending the cost curve down. So costs will continue to rise as we have more individuals coming into Medicaid, but we will be providing that care through care coordination. And basically, one of the things that we took off the table was reducing eligibility. So anyone who was eligible last year in 2012 was eligible this year in 2013 for Medicaid. We did not reduce benefits for our members or beneficiaries. In fact, we added some services, including bariatric surgery, heart transplants, lung transplants, heart and lung transplants, as well as preventive dental for adults. We've had dental for children all along, but we hadn't had any dental services for adults for quite some time. So we were able to add those back. And then also not reducing payments to providers. So the floor was fee-for-service because we thought that that would present an access issue if we had providers leaving Medicaid, and we wanted to make sure that we had good access for our beneficiaries. And so when you take those off the table, which are all short-term solutions, what you're left with is the two key factors to reducing costs. One is care coordination, and that's really saying we have somebody who's looking at the whole person and their whole spectrum of services and making sure that they're getting the right care at the right time, that they're also not getting duplicative services, that if they're willing and able, that they can stay at home with home and community-based services instead of being in a long-term care facility.
Right.
The other thing that we're doing is putting an emphasis on preventive care. So if you think about the term health care, we've, as a country, we've focused on care, the care of acute and chronic conditions. And what we want to do is shift to the health side and in emphasizing prevention, wellness, early detection, and early intervention. So
right.
That's part of what our care coordinators will do.
Dr. Mosher, I want to ask you a little bit more about that in a minute, but I want to tell people you're listening to Casey Currents on KCUR 89.3 FM. I'm Sylvia Maria Gross. Later this hour, we're going to visit a turkey farmer in Lindsberg, Kansas, who's preserving some rare breeds of heritage birds. But right now, we're talking about Kansas's new privatized Medicaid program called CanCare. And here with us are the program's director, Dr. Susan Mosher, and Scott Brunner of the Kansas Health Institute. Scott Brunner, I am wondering, what are you hearing from the people who were covered by CanCare now? Do you find that there are people who have been let go from the program or people who are receiving reduced services like Finn Bullers, who we heard from at the beginning of the hour?
As people have talked to legislative oversight committees and in the media, there's certainly examples of changes in care plans and service changes that have happened. That's, I think, largely to be expected in this kind of a transition and involving the three managed care companies in the service planning and kind of getting their feet on the ground. I don't know overall, at least the statistics the states published in their reporting to the federal government, there doesn't appear to be a reduction in the rate of spending, or in the rate of spending there is, but not in the total amount of spending for Medicaid services. So it's a little hard to figure out whether there's actually a reduction or significant change in the number of services. But there are examples, and and some notable ones that you've already mentioned.
Well, we want to know from our listeners, are you affected by Kansas's move from Medicaid to CanCare? How has your care changed? Tell us at 816-235-2888 or on Twitter at KC Currents. We have a call here from Anna in Overland Park. Hi, Anna.
Hi, this is Teresa, or Anna, sorry. I'm calling in to mention that, hold on, I'm somewhat distracted. I'm calling in as a case claims manager for a behavioral health provider. And I just wanted to say that CanCare actually is costing the state a lot more because they are paying at a lot higher rate than, say, our contracted rate with other insurers. So I guess that's my comment.
Was that true of Medicaid, too?
Excuse me?
Was that true of the previous Medicaid program, or has that been a shift this year?
I guess I'm unaware of that change because it's only recently that I've been in this position.
So, Dr. Mosher, why would Anna be observing that that CanCare is paying at a higher rate than other insurance providers?
That's a little bit surprising to me. And actually, I was a practicing ophthalmologist for 12 years, so Medicaid was one of the lowest reimbursing providers. So for the behavioral health provider there, I would think they would be happy with the payment reimbursement rates there.
For the office provider, but that one is of true, the things, but as also a taxpayer, it's kind of somewhat disturbing.
What I would like to look back is the traditional rates. As we said, the what we set was the floor was fee-for-service, and we wanted to not prevent or provide barriers to care by having providers leave Medicaid. And so there would be negotiated rates between each of the MCOs and each of the provider groups, which we do not get involved in that negotiation there. However, with what the negotiation that we have is with the MCOs for the capitated risk-based managed care payment is a per member per month, and they each have provided a discount off of the rate that we basically provided a savings off of the rate to us.
And Scott Brun, I wonder if that's what you're finding also at the Kansas Health Institute as you check in with different service providers, hospitals, and doctors. Oh, I think we lost Scott for a minute there. But Dr. Mosher, you mentioned that that there's going to be somebody following each person's full medical care, and that will reduce costs because they'll be receiving they'll pay attention to all of that person's needs and also to preventative health. I wonder who is that person that's going to follow the a patient's full coverage.
Two things about that. One, that will be for individuals, you know, high needs individuals. So for someone like myself or probably many of our listeners, they don't need a care coordinator. You know, they're going in for an annual physical. So it's for those individuals that have more complex conditions, chronic diagnoses, diabetes, asthma, chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, things like that. But also what we are doing with the care coordination is there's an individual that can either be working for the MCO as a care coordinator. We also have targeted case management for individuals with intellectual and developmental disabilities, and they can keep their targeted case manager. Their targeted case manager is known to them and someone that typically they've had a relationship with for a long time, and that person will work with a care coordinator within the MCO and to provide the appropriate care for that patient.
We have a call here from Chris in Lenexa. Chris called 816-235-2888 or 816-235-2888. Hi, Chris. What's your question?
Good morning. I had a question. What was mentioned earlier is that that costs were going to remain pretty much the same, even, you know, with staffing and so on, and that basically it sounded like the cost reductions were going to come from greater efficiencies. What I guess my question is, there's an awful lot of publicity about people that are not getting the same level of care that they did before, and that this has really become more of a partisan program than it has a real, true beneficial program for the least, the lower end of the economic scale for Kansans. I'm just wondering how the good doctors kind of look at that as an argument against don't care.
Thanks. How they look at what as a good argument against that, the fact that people may be receiving a reduction in care?
Absolutely. I haven't heard anything positive about can care, and it sounds to me it appears to be a real partisan driven type of agenda more than it is a true healthcare program.
Dr. Mosier, can you address that idea that this is a more partisan idea and not a health based idea?
Yes. Interestingly enough, one of the things that we had to do in order to make this change to CanCare is that we had to work really hand in glove with CMS, our Center for Medicaid and Medicare Services in Baltimore. And what we had to obtain was something called an 1115 waiver. And that waiver, basically each state has a state plan which says who's eligible, what benefits will they receive, and what is the grievance and appeals process, what is the state fair hearings process. And I just want to take a moment and say that for anyone on the reduction of care, I looked at the numbers last night, and the total number of reductions of plans of care across all three MCOs was a total of less than 100. So the reductions in care that we've seen, as we said, went through the approval process of the state. The vast majority of those changes then were looking at what that patient needed overall. And if that patient decided that they didn't agree with that, they have a grievance and appeals process within the MCO. They also have a state fair hearings. They can appeal directly to the state, and they don't have to go through the grievance and appeals process. They can come directly to the state. So so there's multiple opportunities.
And that's what Finn Bullers, who we heard from,
reviewed.
Right. That's what Finn Bullers, who we heard from at the beginning of the show, is doing. Scott Brunner of the Kansas Health Institute, do you have anything to add about that?
Well, I guess I'd just add to the comment about it being a partisan thing. The move in healthcare towards more coordinated care and trying to better utilize healthcare services and healthcare dollars isn't unique to Medicaid, isn't unique to Republican-controlled states or Democratic-controlled states. That's pretty much the model that public programs are moving to, and a lot of private insurance is moving to as well, to add that layer of care coordination, having somebody else look at the kinds of services that are provided, the amount and durations, and to try to make sure people are getting the right amount of services at the right time at the right place. So I don't know that it's as much of a partisan approach. It's pretty common in Medicaid programs around the country and a lot of parts of the Medicare program as well.
But perhaps the idea that programs that would be run better by a for-profit company than by the state may be something that's more partisan?
I wouldn't even agree with that. I think that the choice of how you get to care coordination, better care coordination, is the choice of that states and other payers will make. Some states have chosen to invest in state employees and other kinds of management approaches to achieve that goal. Kansas decided to go through a bid process and find private companies to do it. But I think the goal itself isn't the partisan one. I think, and then states have to make a choice about what the policy tool is they use to get there.
if you are noticing changes in the new CanCare program in Kansas or thinking about what's in store for Missouri, let us know your thoughts at 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888 or on Twitter at Casey Currents. Dr. Mosier, people are reporting delays in authorization for services, and also service providers have been reporting delays in receiving payment from the new managed care organizations that are handling CanCare. And I wonder how you're looking at that and what you're hearing.
What we have is a very detailed oversight of our MCOs, and we also have the pay-for-performance measures. So one of the things that we do, for instance, you mentioned claims payment. We actually have weekly reports with specific down to individual provider issues of payment issues that we follow the MCOs and make sure that they are giving the appropriate services and resolving problems and issues that have come up. The second thing that we have is the pay-for-performance measures. And so we have process measures, and then next year we'll start having the outcome measures as well. And one of those is a pay-for-performance. So I also want to step back and just say when we're talking about pay-for-performance, sometimes people think that the MCOs or the managed care organizations are receiving a bonus, and they are not. Basically, we had negotiated that, and they have to earn that back by meeting certain standards and exceeding certain standards. So contractually, they are obligated to pay all clean claims by 30 days.
So why did you withhold 3% this year?
We withhold that at the beginning, and then if they meet these measures, they can earn back. So this year there were five measures, and so for that 3%, basically the 3% is divided up, so it's a, say about 0.75% for each of the measures, and if they meet that performance goal, then they will receive that money that we withheld. So it's an incentive to perform to higher standards.
What performance goals were they not meeting?
One that is the one that you mentioned was the clean claims payment. And so we've been working with them on that particular issue. As I said, we get weekly reports, and we also speak with them in between on particular issues as they surface. The other thing that we have is for beneficiaries or providers, a no wrong door. So we want to be accessible. We can't solve a problem if we don't know about it. So if you go to the CanCare website at www.cancare.ks.gov, there are phone numbers there. There's phone numbers for help with enrollment. There's phone numbers for grievance and appeals. There's a phone number for the CanCare Ombudsman. There's also email, fax, you know, whatever way you'd like to contact us. But we are committed to the people of the state of Kansas to provide the best possible care. And so if there are problems, which we know, we've certainly heard about the ones that we know of, but if somebody is out there and they have a problem and they haven't contact us, we just ask them to please do, because we do want to make this work for everyone.
And Scott Brunner, what are you hearing about this issue of delayed payments to providers and also delays in authorization for services for people who are having to wait longer times to get their services?
The same kind of press reports and things that have been reported in legislative committees that that you've already talked about, and it's certainly a concern. I listened to some of the calls that the state would host right at transition in January and for the weeks following the transition, and trying to understand what problems providers were having. Some of those issues seem to be resolved, or the listing of the problems indicates that they've been resolved, but there are still at least these lingering reports that there are payment issues.
And Scott, when do you think we'll know whether CanCare is working, whether it's saving the state money and providing better care?
But I think certainly at the end of the first year, when the states had the chance to look at all of the data the three plans are going to submit and look at their financial performance over the first year, there'll be some indications there of whether you know, in terms of total services delivered and paid for, whether the targets that were set up early in the contract are met. It's a little hard to tell in the first 6 months or so, over the first 6 months, given the some, you know, the, if payments weren't timely or weren't correct, just in the transition issues. But I think after, you know, 12 full months of data and time to operate the program, there ought to be some early indications of whether the goals are being met.
Well, Scott Brunner is a senior analyst.
That we've had, can I just say one thing?
We just have about 10 seconds left.
Yeah, we did have, we were able to, with initial savings, apply $37 million to the waiting list. So we're able to have, we have waiting lists for individuals with physical disabilities and 400.
Dr. Mosher, thank you so much. I'm so sorry, but I have to stop you there because we have to move on. But Dr. Mosher is the Director of Medicaid Services at the Kansas Department for Health and Environment. Thank you for joining us. Scott Brunner is Senior Analyst at the Kansas Health Institute and former Medicaid Director. Thank you.
Thanks, Sylvia.